The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and the Dripping JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
And we're 3-2.
BetMGM. The place for soccer in Canada presents Footy Prime. I've been trying that all night. I thought, let's give something different today. What do you think?
Yeah.
No?
No, don't ever do it again.
Okay. You sounded like Yogi Bear.
Not Boo Boo, at least.
Hey, Boo Boo.
Hey, hey, hey. Anyways, Footy Prime. It's Friday. Another week behind us. Dubs, great interview, by the way, with Casey Stoney yesterday. When I say interview, I'm assuming it was because I haven't listened yet. But I'm going to listen to it today. I'm sure you had a good response. You said it was a great interview. She was candid.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes she is, but I have the luxury of talking to Casey Stoney more often on Match Day Minus Ones. So you can speak, and Jimmy knows this, you can speak to coaches who are still really muted. They keep their cards close to their vest. They don't divulge very much. You know, there's a lack of trust there. She's always been very open-handed with us on broadcast. But then it's a very different thing when you get somebody on a platform, and she was making the rounds yesterday. It was a busy day for media availability. But you don't always know what you're going to get with the coach. She's usually pretty transparent and pretty forthcoming. But she really dug into some good stuff, especially about the fuzzy strawberry analogy, where, you know, sometimes you have some complacency and you with some long-standing mainstays and veterans, and a fuzzy strawberry, somebody with a bad attitude, and that can quickly infect and lead to a bad culture, right? So she made some tough decisions. She alluded to those, and she talked about youth that's coming up in the team and the program that don't give a rat's ass. And she kind of hesitated before she said rat's ass. And I wanted to be like, Casey, you can say whatever you want here. Like, if you want to even like double down on rat's ass, go further. Yeah. We're here for it. But I think she felt comfortable, and Shireen and Signa asked some great questions too. So it was a nice forum for her to just talk about her journey thus far as a women's national team coach, but also the inherent challenges of only having 5 windows this year as they're preparing for really important qualifications in November. And then you get to prepare for that with 2 home friendlies against a really good European opponent. So we dug into all of that and dug into the fact that she hasn't tried poutine yet, or poutine as we call it here.
Really?
And yeah. And
where does she live?
Audrey,
does she live in England still? Or is she based here?
No.
She
must be
California.
I think she's still based in San Diego.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah.
If you had one question you would have asked her, because there's always one that's hanging, what would it have been?
I would have spent a little bit more time about her views on NSL. But if you take a look at some other publications, and I don't recommend you do that, but put your ear,
right
ear yeah, your headphones in and listen to Footy Prime, the broadcast, and our take on Casey Stoney and what she revealed to us, because I think it was the more candid interview. But she does talk about the increase in standard and quality in NSL in year 2, but that the league is not quite there yet. If you're looking at it globally, not quite top 5, but it's well on its way. So I would have leaned into NSL a bit more.
Although, in fairness, the fuzzy strawberry is the low-hanging fruit for any interview.
Yeah, you're 0 for 2 today.
Come on, Jesus. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, but then that's
already that bombed in the ground. Like, it's already there.
Don't overthink it, for Christ's sakes.
Is you did already.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Go, go get your CPAP smear and everything will be figured out.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right.
So listen, later today, the Supporters Club challenged us to have another MLS roundtable. And we have an MLS roundtable later in today's show talking about TFC Montreal and Vancouver. Is Roman. We have Lloyd Barker back on the show. And, of course, J-Mo, John Molinaro of TFCRepublic.ca. So stay tuned for that. So to start, though, it's Dubs, it's Wonger, it's Jimmy. No JC, no Craig today. I'm Shams. There was some big news this week in the Canadian men's zeitgeist, so to speak. Some good news with some big transfers we'll get to. But some more, I don't know, another gut punch for I feel it's almost selfish saying this because it's not about us, it's about him. But Moise Bembido undergoing more surgery on that left tibia. Fibula.
That gag didn't work either.
Well, apparently the initial recuperation didn't work either because he was playing through immense pain during the World Cup, which I don't think comes as a big surprise to us. But the fact that he's undergoing more surgery now to that same injury, and he's going to be out for, well, it seems like months as opposed to weeks at this point. Jimmy, I suppose the question is, okay, great character to be shown playing in some big games when you got back on the pitch at the World Cup and played pretty well, actually, considering what he's going through. But the question is, should he have been picked in the first place? Should he have been in that squad, given that he's actually this close to needing yet more surgery?
Yeah, I don't think they knew the full extent that he would need another surgery on it. I think it was one of those that they thought he was going to be in a situation where they might have been able to use him, which they did. But I mean, I remember watching the games and we were just like, he's not right. You can see he's hobbling. And it's hard because you've got a player who's world class, who's great in the dressing room. He's a leader. Passionate playing for Canada, and it's hard to say no, you can't come in because you've got an injury or you might not be able to give us 100%. And I think they were hoping at least if they could have got 80% out of him, then it would have been a good thing for Canada, because we need him. He's a fantastic player. So I understand why they would have brought him in, just to be there and be a part of it. But it's sad to see where he is now. Obviously needs another operation. He's going to be out even longer this time. But you hope that he does come back with full fitness, 100%, with no, what's the word I'm looking for? Not no injuries, but no...
Long-term like, issues.
Consequences.
Yeah, no issues in the long term, you know. And I think with this injury himself, this is where he's got to be 100% with himself and say, you know, I am not coming back. I am not stepping onto this pitch until I know I'm 100% right. Because if I mess around with this again and I need another operation, I'm going to be out even longer. So, you know, it's a tough situation for him. It really is. You feel for him. You don't want to see anybody out long term with injuries like this. But I wish him well and a speedy recovery.
Dubs, I mean, if you saw him at training, every reporter's eyes were on that leg. And there was a genuine bump on that shin, which isn't uncommon with a broken bone in the shin, but it was pretty obvious there was a bump on that, and it looked painful just to look at it. Like, wow,
would that be calcified? Is that why?
Yes, calcification, Jimmy.
Yes.
We had a debate about this during the summer.
Did.
It was the callus, right? And you were indeed correct. And I was like, no, it's not callus, but bone does that when it's repairing itself.
I was right.
So you had Jimmy done. That's like 3 months later. He's still holding it on. Yeah,
right? Jimmy, we don't see in Jimmy's setup, he's got all of these comebacks on post-its behind his computer.
Yeah, you know, like those detective shows in the big wall with the strings and all the linking all these. He's got that. But Dubs, I mean, it looked painful, and I don't think Canada Soccer was at all happy with the way that injury was dealt with and needs to begin with. They sent their own guy over there, in fact, don't forget, before the World Cup to kind of oversee his recovery, which to me screams, well, they weren't happy at all. We saw Tejon have a similar injury and dealt with really well. Was it Inter when he did that?
Ooh.
Was he Inter Milan? I think he was.
It was he broke his leg during Copa training, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, he was at Inter.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So Inter Milan, obviously a massive club, obviously has presumably a fantastic sports science medical division. They dealt with that really well. And clearly it wasn't dealt with properly at Nice. Maybe I'm jumping the gun there a little bit, but that's my perception. Regardless of, you know, should he have played or shouldn't he have played, the fact is the depth at centre-back, we thought it was pretty good, but Derek Cornelius was coming aboard without playing much football prior to that. Alfie Jones shouldn't have gone to the World Cup, right? Turns out, although they will say that he got injured during training at the World Cup. It's another injury which may have come as a result of the ankle injury. A lot of questions here that will probably never get answered. But centre back in the end, thank God we had depth. Because without Moyes at full strength, without, you know, Derek, you know, obviously didn't even play the last game, did he? We saw a Luc de Vigerol emerge at that tournament, play really well. Ralph Prizo couldn't make it either. It was out of all the positions, we thought left wing might be an issue. All the positions, I think the most angst it caused the training staff was probably centre back.
Just to take a step back for a second, we've had a rash of injuries with our men's national team, and there's been some ACLs, there's been some really devastating long-term injuries, and then you see the recurring hamstring and muscular injuries, whether you're an Alfie Jones or you're a Ralph Prizo, it was a hamstring immediately, but like ACL and then like a Fonzie or even like a Liam Miller on his way back from his ACL recovery with Hull City suffered the hamstrings. That's pretty typical. But what's atypical is the amount of fractures and tibia fractures that we've seen with this men's national team. And it all started off with Max playing for LAFC, the heroic intervention that led to them lifting the MLS Cup. That was the first. And then Tejon. And then you see Moyes, October 5th, so it's coming up to a year since it first happened, even though there was a stress fracture that indicated there was potentially a frailty there. And then also, obviously, Ismail Kone. So it's really strange to me, and it must be giving the medical staff some pause to look at that. And before I address the depth issue, you look at Nice, and then because there's this body of evidence in front of the medical staff to show the recovery and the return to play of these other players following a tibia fracture, with Moyes, again, a year. So you look at the type of surgery, how it was performed, his immediate recovery from that, I would have questions. And if I'm Jesse Marsh, I would be furious about the way that that was handled. So I know in his interview for Nice, for his club, it was very candid. He was very forthcoming. He shared a lot about his physical, but also his mental journey. And he talked about the burden on him mentally to want desperately to perform for his country at home in front of friends and family. And so there's a certain part of you that will turn a blind eye to the electric shock that you're feeling every time you take a step that's other than walking. Like, I can't imagine dealing with that day in and day out. So what's unclear to me, to kind of put a bow on all of this, is the surgery going to take place in Canada? Will the club be okay with that? Because his recovery is going to spend 6 weeks in Montreal, surrounded by friends and family as he recovers. But is there a certain amount of agency that the player has, and then also Jesse Marsh in Canada, to shepherd him or to turn him elsewhere to get the best possible care so that they don't fuck this up the second time around? Because it's a player's welfare now that's on the line, right? And obviously, Nice, he's an asset for them. They want the very best for the player. But it's also projecting long-term. Like, Moyes is probably thinking, if this doesn't go well again, like, I might be screwed here. Like, this is my future on the line. And so he plays 90 minutes, to go back to your question, Sharms, when Derek Cornelius, I think last minute, isn't available, and he's thrust into that position. So I don't think at that point he's done anything irreparable. I think the damage is already done to the tibia, and he's probably going to have surgery, but he goes back to Nice, and he tries to play to see if he can take the month and maybe get to a point where he can salvage a season and not have to go back and do the surgery. But I can't imagine how difficult it must have been for him to contemplate that after participating in a World Cup, which he was probably so proud of, right?
Yeah,
but you have to separate that and then reconcile the two and arrive at a conclusion that's so difficult to say, okay, we're going to have surgery again and we just hope for the best now.
Sure. Jimmy, I just wanted to hit the... So the current injury and fitness tracker for the Canadian men's national team, Ismail Kone, we know what happened to him. Marcelo Flores, right, ACL. Alfonso Davies, still having issues. Moyes Bembido, we just talked about. Alistair Johnston. Tejon Buchanan, he's fully recovered, so he's back. But Ali Ahmed, ACL. And to Dubs, I just want a correction. It's irreparable. Not irreparable. I'm just
You are incorrect, sir.
But the other thing I was just thinking about, that Montreal thing, I was really fortunate back in the day to have Dr. Leinster and Tomlinson at McGill, who were the Habs like our team of surgeons. Leinster was the longtime surgeon and doctor for the Habs. The Montreal community of doctors for sports is amazing. It's just like Toronto. Yep. So to your point, Amy, if the... Who's Amy? Your point, Dubs.
It's me.
If they are going to... If he is going to get the surgery in Montreal, it's a top-rated surgical team. It's top recovery. These guys know what they're doing. And it may be the better choice, to your point. Especially with recovery and 6 weeks of your family being around. Because we all know how important it is to have that emotional support while you're going through all of that.
Yep.
Well, it's certainly better than Dr. Nick Riviera or whoever I'll perform the first time. Jesus.
Who, Edward Scissorhand?
but Jimmy, I mean, you're right. We watch
him
play. He
gets all the low-hanging fruit.
Oh, there's a strawberry.
Jimmy, I mean, you're right. We watched him play, and it wasn't, you know, he wasn't as fluid as we see in Moyes run. That was obvious. But he still actually played quite well. Yeah. And if you didn't know he was injured, he still, I think, justified his selection in the team when he got back into that side. People are hammering the medical staff right now, right? He would have had scans that said, okay, this thing's not going to just snap again. You had to, at some point, rely on the player and say, okay, can you go or can you not go? That's Jesse Marsh's job. And the medical teams, they can do only so much, right? And then it comes down to the player. As a guy that played for Canada, do you understand why perhaps he put the short term, you know, the emotion of playing in a home World Cup above perhaps the long term objectivity?
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, you've got priorities and you've got goals that you want to achieve as a player. And every single player, if they're honest, will tell you they're never 100% when they play. There's always something. There's always a niggle or there's a pain that you're getting, but you play through it. And he's probably looked at it and thought, I'm going to play through this because this is one of my goals. This is something I've always wanted to achieve, is play in Canada during a World Cup. And he tested the waters and he went out and played. I thought he did perform well, but yeah, I mean, in the end, he was in pain and in some discomfort and it didn't go according to plan. But, you know, they've taken off a lot to stop a player putting on that jersey and playing in a World Cup.
Yeah, you have to credit the guy. Just like you look at that arc from June 1st, where he played that half versus Uzbekistan, and we were like, oh boy. Like, not only is Canada in trouble, but Moyes Bombido, the player, is in big trouble here. Like, there's no way he's going to make the roster. We remember the push and the pull and, like, the news that broke that he wasn't going to make the roster. Then finally he was on the roster. And then, like, in slides and in sandals at training, like, didn't look anywhere close to returning. And then finally, like, this surge of whether it's mental fortitude or it's the psychological component, and he's back in there and he's playing handfuls of minutes, ending with that 90 minutes that he plays. So, like, credit to the guy for not only the push, the trusting in himself, but the way that he went in heavy to reassure the staff, I can do this, even if it was maybe misguided, right? Like, like, that's within a month. So that's very impressive, even if it did end up hurting him in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, it's just overall obviously disappointing and concerning for Canada's future. Luc de Vigerol looked really good yesterday, actually playing for Fulham in the Carabao Cup. And there's, I don't know who did it. Who was it, Dubs? There's a great little montage of his defensive plays in that game. I didn't watch
Juni,
the game.
J-U-N-I on Twitter is the handle. Yeah.
Okay. It's great. It's a great little piece. Mm-hmm. And he looks solid. And I hope he sticks around. It seems that he will be in the squad at least of Fulham, who did concede some goals last week against Chelsea, which is good. I'm watching that thinking, oh, that's good. That's good. You know, they're not that tight at the back. Maybe Luke can get some minutes this year because he looked outstanding, I thought, in that two-minute highlight reel of defensive plays. Maybe there was 2 minutes of, like, terrible mistakes as well, which we didn't see.
They will never show you the mistakes in highlights.
They won't show the mistake. That's for the video sessions, right, with the coach after the fact. But no, it was really good. So he looks solid. So listen, there's a lot of injuries, and a lot of these guys won't be available, obviously, for the next window, which isn't that far off, by the way. But maybe that opens some doors for some other players to get some minutes. And I do wonder, Dubs, is this Luc de Vigerol, regardless of who's healthy, he's pretty close he's not cementing himself in that side. But that's a pretty easy call for Jesse Marsh to make at this point.
Yes. You mean like as a starter or just somebody who's included? Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I always reference the fact that at Copa as an 18-year-old, you know, prepping, I'm not sure if it was Uruguay or it was a different match that they played there. And that was, I think, a tipping point in this program to show that they could throw their weight around and they could compete with the heavyweights in the region. And Luc de Fougerolles at 18 was the first player on that team sheet for that match when they were preparing. So that says something for, like, it speaks to his potential. It speaks to the confidence that the technical staff and Jesse Marsh as the head coach has in him. But then his evolution since then has been, I mean, he's on the ascent, right? And then he's gone from like a boy looking like he's competing with men to now not fully formed, because I think he hasn't reached his highest potential. There's still a ways to go until he hits his prime and he hits his best. And that's got to be encouraging. But now he looks like a guy who's really cemented himself, to use your word, and can probably carve out some minutes for himself. I was fearful with Fulham. They keep him around. He doesn't go on loan. Does he really get enough minutes to progress, to continue to develop? And you don't want him just rotting on a bench somewhere, but just to say that you're playing in the Prem, but you never really get a sniff. But to see what he did, I know it's the Carabao Cup, it's not league play, but he does enough in and out of possession. Like, he's a really robust, clever center back who will go up for challenges, not dive in, understand when he has to cover, and he's really good on the ball. And what I'm most impressed with is his elite tackling. And it looks like he does leave the game with a little bit of a niggle or picks up something as he wins a tackle. So hopefully it's just something small and it's precautionary. But his timing is really good, whether he's choosing to step out of that back line to win a challenge when you've got the striker who's dropping off the line, or he's probing forward and he can break out of the defensive half where he's going, or the third, and go into the buildup and contribute and progress the ball. So he's a really aggressive player on the ball, but he usually makes the right decisions. And that's got to be heartening if you're the Fulham head coach or if you're Jesse Marsh watching this from afar.
Alfie Jones got a start also this week for Middlesbrough in the Carabao Cup.
Yep.
Played 72 minutes there as well in the squad on the last couple of match days as well. So he's getting healthy, which is good. Also good news, Jimmy, or is it good news? A lot of people saying he could do better. Stefan Eustachio to Swansea in the Championship. Yep. The guy's 29 now, right? I think it's a really solid move for Eustachio, isn't it?
It is. It's a great club. Swansea's a really good club. Snoop Dogg's there. I wonder if he had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I forgot about that.
Luka Modric, too.
And Modric, yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, Swansea was in the Premier League a while back for quite some time. And, you know, they played a great brand of football. They still do. It's a very well-supported club in the Championship. So for him to go there, look, you're in top six European League. You know, people say, oh, maybe stay in Portugal or go to Italy. But the Championship's a competitive league, and it's a good league to play in. It really is, and I think he'll do well there.
My buddy, I have a buddy on Twitter who said, some will say, but why not top flight? Because the Champ is a fantastic league. Swansea is a big club and presents more opportunity than MLS currently. And that friend is James Sharman.
Oh, really? Well, that is the debate, right?
Is it the debate?
I think it's clear and obvious myself that the Championship presents more opportunities than MLS does at this point. You know, we see Zikal Laren doing really well there. He could have gone to MLS. We saw old Jaden Nelson. He's gone to Bolton from MLS. Jimmy, you played the Championship.
Yeah.
You know how strong that league is. Would you recommend young players to, if they get the opportunity, to go to the Championship as opposed to MLS at the moment?
That's a difficult one. Look, because MLS it's a great league. It really is a good league. But if guys want to go to Europe and you got an opportunity to go to the Championship, you know, that's the direction that you prefer to go rather than stay in MLS. And yeah, it is. It's a great league. You know, every game means something because there is a promotion, there is a relegation. You've gotten teams that drop down. For instance, West Ham, they got that parachute payment where they're spending a lot of money. With MLS, you spend all your money on three players. There's a salary cap. There's a certain amount of players you can have on a roster. In the Championship, there isn't a salary cap. The rosters are a lot bigger because of the demand of the league. Everybody's striving to get promoted. So they are going out and buying players all around the world to compete, to push up into the next game. So that's why I think every game means something in the championship, because you're either going for promotion or you're fighting a relegation battle. So there is a lot of players that either you get promoted or they end up getting bought from the championship to go to the Premier League. So you're seeing a lot of players now, especially Canadians, getting into the championship, because it is a good league.
Here's one for you. So before we get to our MLS roundtable, Dubs, you mentioned promotion, relegation, and Swansea could be in the Prem next year, for example, right? We look at Southampton, who are so close to getting into it this year with Kyle. How many current EFL championship teams have played in the Prem in recent years? Out of 24 clubs, any idea? What's your guess? I want to wonder, everyone guess, how many do you think?
How many what? Sorry?
Have been
many,
in there many, historically? Like
yeah, last few years. How many championship teams have played in the Premier League?
So,
I'll what? Say five.
How many current championship teams, 24 clubs, right, have at some point played in the Premier League?
So that are five. In the champion that are in the championship right now?
Right now, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh, got it.
Oh, gosh.
So 24.
Like no 17. One Googled it.
No, I just want to see the. I want to see the teams.
Right.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
I said five. So my inclination was go a higher number, because football is rooted in that history and tradition. So clubs have been around forever, right? Yeah. So I was thinking, it's probably a higher number than I think. And then I went the other way with my guess.
Three,
so I'm going to say, I said five. I'm also going to stick with it.
No, I respect you for just guessing as well, as opposed to looking at the table like Jimmy is.
He's looking at the table because he knows he wants to be correct. He knows everyone. It's probably 18? Like 24.
18?
Oh, shit.
19.
19.
Oh, wow. 19 of them. So Birmingham, yep. Blackburn.
Yep.
Bolton.
Yeah.
Burnley. Cardiff. Charlton. Derby. Borough. Norwich. Portsmouth. QPR. Sheffield United. Southampton. Stoke. Swansea. Watford. West Brom, West Ham, and Wolves. The other five, Bristol, Lincoln, Millwall, who I'm pretty sure were in there actually once upon a time, weren't they?
Mm. No, Preston, not in the Premier League.
Were they not?
Not Premier Preston, League when it started.
Okay, no. First Division, First Division. Preston and Wrexham have never played in the Premier League. So it just shows that, there's so much movement between the table that a move to the Championship, it does offer you an opportunity to get to the Premier League with that club, potentially. Liam Miller being a prime example. Mm-hmm. Of it. So,
it's interesting, Sharms, because First Division, you'd even see some like Queen's Park Rangers went down, right? Mm-hmm. QPR, and they used to be in the Prem, and they're probably in the First Division now, right?
No, QPR's
in the Championship.
Are they in Championship? Okay.
You're thinking like, but Wigan has dropped down.
Yeah.
There's been other clubs, right?
Bolton as well. Bolton were dropped down a good few divisions, and they were in the Premier League for a while.
Yeah, like you said, they're
speaking of Liam Miller. I was reading that he could be going to Stoke. Hull is interested in Sorba Thomas and Stoke, like Liam Miller. And there might be a little swap deal here on the table.
I mean,
there was a discussion over the last few days.
Really?
Mm. Yeah.
We'll break it down when it happens. I want to see Liam Miller in the Prem. He looked pretty good when he came off the bench last time.
Yeah, of course.
But Stoke's also a big club, right?
And there's another one minutes. That was in the Premier League.
yeah, exactly.
But it was just about to minutes. Put to kind of add to Jimmy's discussion, your question to him about MLS versus Championship, I don't think it's that. It's not that that's reductive, but I don't think it's that simplistic. Mm-hmm. Is that you also look like Stephen Eustachio thought he was likely going to Italy or Spain. And then Swansea came along and like, it's a big club. Their coach Vitor Matos is Portuguese. He loves the possession play. He wants to dictate on the game, and that appealed to Eustachio. So it's about the relationship you might have with the coach. It's about the style of play, the philosophy, and also the club itself, not just the league that they're toiling in.
Did you see the Matos' comments about Eustachio? It was infusive. He knows all about the player.
Yeah.
Obviously, at Porto. And even Porto put out a video saying thank you for being a great dragon, basically. Mm.
Yeah.
So even though he didn't get that many minutes the last few months there, like, they loved him there. He was well respected. Well, Supporters Club, you demanded this for a while now. We've been, I don't know, our MLS coverage has been conspicuous by its absence the last few weeks and months. So blame the World Cup. Simple as that. Blame the World Cup. But we're back with some real MLS chat now. You wanted a round table. So we got you a round table. And it's interesting because right now as it stands, we have one really good team in Vancouver, 40 points, first place in the West. We've got two teams desperately trying to be good teams and getting closer every day. TFC 24 points in the East, just out of the playoffs. Montreal 21 points, just out of the playoffs. It's tight. So we have John Molinaro of TFCRepublic.ca. Hey, JMO.
Hello.
We have Asa Rahman, radio voice of the Whitecaps and a weekly coverer on television of the Whitecaps. Hey, Asa.
Hey, how you doing, James? Happy to be
good
on
man.
Here.
Good man. And we have a fellow who's returning to the podcast. He's been on before. I've known this guy for many years. He's a legend of the game here in Canada, specifically in Montreal. Currently, though, he's sporting director of the Nepean Hotspurs. His name's Lloyd Barker. Now, Lloyd Barker was honored this past weekend in Montreal. He makes the Wall of Fame for, well, CF Montreal, but going back to the Impact days. Lloyd, you're still in Montreal. The party hasn't ended, has it?
No. But I got to get out of here because I got to get my life back. So I think tonight is going to be the departure. It's been 1 week, but it's been fantastic. Really, it's a humbling honor, as you can imagine, for the Wall of Fame. And it's been a beautiful 5, 6, 7 days because I've just spent it with so many important people in my life throughout that week. So yeah, it's been amazing, to be honest. And it's just time to get my life back. So I'll be departing this city at the end of the day today, by end of the day, and head back to Ottawa, where I'll be jumping back into the ship with the Nepean Hotspurs, the club that I look after right now.
I mean, yeah, thank God departing the city, not departing your life, because I can imagine it's been quite a whirlwind the last little while. I mean, how many old teammates did you run into, or old people from that era of your career?
Oh, and that was actually the beautiful moment, because John Limniadis, Lyndon Hooper drove up. I had Joel Bailey fly in from Trinidad for this. We had guys coming in from the U.S. It was just amazing. John Limniadis and Lyndon Hooper are two players. And I'll just tell you a quick tidbit. I was 16 years old when the Ottawa Capital Pioneer, that was the original Canadian Soccer League, they were on that team, and I took the bus for 2 hours each way to go watch them play a game. I watched the team play a game, and those two players stood out for me, John Limniadis and Lyndon Hooper. And I just remember taking the bus back home and thinking, man, I want to do that, man. Lyndon covered every blade of grass on the field. Back in that time, you could pass the ball back to the goalkeeper. They could pick it up. So Limniadis is taking it off his chest and playing it over the attacker's head for the goalkeeper to gather. It was just, he was full of skill. And I just remember thinking, man, I want to do that. And those two guys inspired me to do what I ended up doing. And I made sure I pointed that out to them this past weekend.
It's so true. They're two names. I mean, there's so many, of course, who are founding members of Canadian soccer royalty who don't get the respect they deserve because it's a different era, different generation. That is changing, I think, moving forward. But we got to start honoring the alumni in this country. I think it's so important, and it's been spoken about at the highest levels. I know that. We're yet to see some real tangible movement on that side. But football didn't begin in 2022 in the men's side in this country, right?
Yeah,
it started a long time ago when these guys were playing for freaking nothing.
Absolutely. And like I said, I went out of my way. First of all, I'm appreciative that they both showed up. Like I said, Lyndon came in from Toronto for this. I just made sure that they knew what they meant for me and my career in a moment where, yeah, I'm getting recognized, but I got to recognize those that, you know, helped to inspire me, so to speak, to recognize them. So yeah. It's been a beautiful week, to be honest. And I've been grateful. Humbling experience.
It's classy, Lloyd. You know, yeah, it's about you, but you've made it about them. That's fantastic. So I think we all appreciate that. Hey, how's the Alexis Sanchez experience so far in Montreal?
It's building. It's building. He jumped in on my alumni picture at the end with the boys, which we appreciate. He was just doing some extra running, so he jumped in on that. It's building. I think it's the Didier Drogba thing was a huge success when Didier was in Montreal. And the city has been clamoring for a follow-up act for Didier, and it has not been the case. And so I think here's an opportunity for potentially the next, you know, the follow-up to Didier. It's early days. We know what he brings. I like these type of players because they're hungry. You know, I like players that, you know where they come from. You know, the one thing you always hear about these types of players is that they just have this desire and this hunger for the game to always train. They're always in shape, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't got to tell you how in Toronto, how easy it is to miss or to bring in the wrong people, basically. I do not have to tell you that. So, again, it's early days with Alexis. The age, I don't really sweat the age anymore. We see what Messi's doing. Might not want to use him as an example because he's from another planet. But I even look at Suarez, Luis Suarez, who's up there in age, playing on literally one leg, if that, maybe a half a leg. And every now and again, he'll score, you know, a Galactico, just this amazing goal. And so I don't really worry about the age, but it's the hunger, it's the commitment that when they come, you just want them to understand where they are, that you want them to buy into to what's happening, and then let the football play itself out. So with Alexis, it's early days, nothing really to report, to be honest. The city, I think, is excited. A bunch of pictures that I took with my family and friends. On Saturday, the Chilean flag was very, very, it was very, very present in just about all my pictures, which I appreciate. But yeah, I think they're clamoring for something. So it's like, you know, when you've been losing, for example, and now people just want, a winner, to something to show for their efforts and going out there every weekend. So we'll see how it plays out, but nothing really to report just yet.
Well, we're seeing what an aging superstar can do for a market. We're seeing that in Vancouver right now with Thomas Muller. Asa, here's one for you. Who would you take, an Innes prime Alexis Sanchez on the Whitecaps or an Innes prime Thomas Muller? Innes?
Oh, that's a great question. I think watching them both in their prime, I think I would have taken Alexis Sanchez because such a big fan of the way he plays. The excitement he brings, the way he can kind of bring people off their seats. I mean, even when Thomas Muller first arrived, the scouting report and understanding the attributes and the skills that he possessed was like hard to really put your finger on, like not the fastest, not the strongest, but the smartest player. And then I think if you ask me now, I would say Thomas Muller because of what he does on the pitch. And then finding the right fit, especially for an MLS team, is so huge. And Lloyd had touched upon that as well with what went on with TFC. And Thomas Muller totally gets it, understands the market, understands the fan base, understands the team, the impact that he can have on young players. And that's where, I'd probably pick Thomas Muller now, have him in his prime, because he has such an influence on developing these young players and just impacting and getting the best out of absolutely everyone. He is an extra coach on the pitch, and it's something that I never appreciated, understood, realized about his game until now, until watching him with the Whitecaps over the past year.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Players age in different ways.
Do you guys remember Robbie Keane?
Yeah.
The Galaxy. Robbie Keane. Find you a player, a DP like Robbie Keane, and your franchise is in good hands.
He's a dick to me once in an interview, so no.
So no.
I got no time for someone who I'm judging on a 5-second interaction in my career. But I mean, that's a guy that was able to, despite a guy that relied on his pace early in his career for sure, but adapted and maybe Alexis just did the same thing.
Just the commitment. He bought in from the get-go. You could tell just the way he spoke about joining the league and what he's going to bring. Thomas Müller, I mean, Thomas, he's a gem. These players that you hear about, and it's not about the football, that you hear the compliments. It's about the locker room and what they bring and the leadership qualities. Those are players that you seek.
Yeah, that's a good segue for J-Mo there. Who knows, having covered TFC the last 5-6 years, well, obviously longer than that, but it's all about the locker room and how you adapt and the hunger, something that TFC have got wrong in their search for that big name DP the last number of years. But it seems that they've learned their lesson. They're going for players now. I use Nicholas Dorch as an example. He's just arrived, right? It's a bit early to judge in J-Mo, but I know he's out right now with an injury, but he seems to be getting it and understanding his role perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, it is early days. He's only played 3 games, 2 of which were starts. So, I mean, I don't want to make any sort of big proclamations, but from what I saw before the injury, both on and off the pitch, he seems to get it. You know, I think he offers them solidity, you know, in the center of midfield on both sides of the ball. And, you know, we were talking before we went on air, Sherms, he kind of gives off Michael Bradley type vibes in the sense that somewhat of a similar player, but just in terms of his stature, right? And just what in terms of the leadership and just sort of bringing up the intensity of the rest of the group. And, you know, here's a guy who's played in, you know, in Germany, came up through the Bayern Munich system and, you know, comes to TFC at a good age. I mean, 28 with, you know, plenty of life left in his legs, had a pretty good reputation playing in the Bundesliga. And, you know, very self-aware too. I mean, when we spoke to him 2 weeks ago, he kind of knew that, you know, his career was over, like, you know, because his old club had been relegated. And so his options, he had some options, but in terms of like playing top flight football in Europe, he really knew that it was kind of that the options weren't necessarily there. So coming to MLS was a, you know, an opportunity to get his career sort of in a different sort of tangent and still play at a high level. And so I really appreciate that level of sort of self-awareness and honesty just about of where he is as a player. So I think he's come in a very short period of time and really made an impact. Now, it'll be interesting to see how much he'll be on the sidelines for with his facial fracture. But if they can get him back relatively quickly, then I think he can be you know, a major contributor for TFC.
You know what, John, it reminds me of, and I know Thomas Müller gets all the headlines right now with the Vancouver Whitecaps, but this core, this setup right now with the Vancouver Whitecaps was really built with Andres Cubas and Ryan Gold. And those are they're those types of players who came in who were, you know, in a situation where they were going to be relegated and then come in to the Vancouver Whitecaps hungry and still like a good age in their prime and have been like key parts of this project here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it ties back to sort of what Lloyd was saying about Alexis Sanchez, about being hungry and, you know, maybe not necessarily having a point to prove, but wanting to, you know, certainly hungry and wanting to make a, you know, a splash in Montreal. So I'm really interested to see how that works out and how, I mean, Lloyd could probably speak to this better than I can, but how, you know, how if he'll be embraced by the local fans and if he can sort of get the interest back in the club.
But he spoke about that actually at his press conference. They asked him what he thought about people commenting on his age. And he basically said, yeah, I don't have any comments about that. And I'll just show them on the pitch. So, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think that in terms of Alexis, so far what I've seen is he appears to want to be someone who's leading the group. He comes on and he's pointing at guys and he's telling them where to be and so on. The football, he hasn't really had a significant effect at the moment in the few games that he's played. Like I said, it's early days, so we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, they're working him up to fitness, and then we'll see as the days go on. But I think just from a leadership standpoint, Didier, I've spoken to a lot of guys that were in the locker room with Didier. That was the one thing they appreciated. And I went to a number of training sessions where Didier was the last player on the field, you know, after sessions. And then you could just see the young players just kind of feeding off of that as well. So just they bring more than just the football to the locker room. Sometimes that stuff is priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to lift the room, especially in Montreal, for example, right? That's struggled so far. But an injection of that kind of star power, if he can deliver, perhaps not to the, you know, the superstar power that he's done in the past, but just deliver to a decent level, that's enough for a team that needs some good news, right? It's been tough there the last little while in Montreal. Does it feel like a stable club there right now with ownership? And there's lots of talk about, you know, where Canada stands with its MLS franchises over the next 5, 10, 15 years. How's it feel in Montreal right now?
I mean, I just got honored, James, so I don't really want to.
Fair enough. How great was it in Montreal with the ownership and the stability?
No, here's, I mean, I'll share some insight with you. Obviously, I'm very well connected to the club. I'm in the know with the club behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, the side of the scenes. What I can tell you is that they do have a plan. They have a plan and they're working towards executing that plan. So, as you can imagine, I can't share all the beautiful details, but I think Alexis coming in, that's a part of the plan.
Right.
You know, and there's more to come from what I gather. It is a work in progress. And I do think stability is what they're aiming for. So it's funny you should bring that up because I think, yeah, you know, you're absolutely spot on that. You know, they had Corey Ray in place, who has left for St. Louis. And then now Lucas Saputo has stepped up to lead the charge. His brother Simone, they're working hand in hand. And you know, their dad, Joe, he's never far behind. And so, you know, these I was there when these children were born, Luca and Simone. I've been with the club since they were born. So they've basically been raised by the club. Literally. So they are through and through Montreal Impact, CF Montreal, you know, all through their body, their soul, they're connected. And I think people probably lose kind of that the importance of that. Right. Because I think it's more than just an ownership group. It's, you're talking about leaders who were born and bred into this system, into this club. And I think, you know, when like these guys, I mean, I know Joey very well. I mean, this club gives him headaches for, you know, when he loves it so much that it's such a passion for him that I can imagine this is probably his biggest dismay at times when the team is losing and so on and so on. And I suspect it's the same thing with the children. And I think people need to really place some emphasis and some importance on that, if I'm explaining that properly, because these are kids that they're not just the owners of the club and they, you know, executing the plans of the club. They bleed the club.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think, you know, it's easy to criticize ownership, and especially when it's not a, you know, a hedge fund or some multinational telecommunications company. Right. This is individuals who do love the club, perhaps, and are very wealthy people, but not at the extent of, you know, we're talking, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars or whatever it is, some of these organizations. Right. So it is more difficult. Asa knows all about this.
Yeah.
Covering what's happened in Vancouver. Hey, that report last week was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
This 5-year deal.
What report? Exactly.
Yeah. It spiraled, let's put it that way. But, I mean, as well as the team's playing right now, has it quietened down the noise around ownership, or is it still just lingering there? What are you hearing?
Yeah, apparently not. You obviously have fans who want an answer, want a resolution as quickly as possible. As we know, this stuff takes time. Similar to what Lloyd had mentioned, I don't have the insight, obviously, that Lloyd has being closely connected to the club. But I do feel like they have a plan. They have an idea of what they need. And on the surface, I guess I'd put it this way. The sporting side is excellent, and they are at the top of the West. And it's been great. I think on the business side, things need to improve, right? You have 22 straight home games of over 20,000. I think the attendance, the fan base, the support for this team is incredible. Yes, the BC Place deal needs to improve for the Vancouver Whitecaps and ownership to make more money. But yeah, I think that just overall, generally speaking, the business side needs to improve. And maybe this is something that needs to happen across Canada, like for all teams, some way for the teams to generate more money. The TV deal only does so much. So the other thing that was kind of caught my attention was Thomas Muller purchasing this club with a group in Portugal for $47 million. So the valuation is absolutely wild here as well, right? Like you have a top flight Portuguese team going for $47 million, and then you have these MLS valuations at $500 million. And you're like, this math isn't mathing at the moment, because I imagine that the overhead and the cost to operate these clubs is probably similar. So where are you making the money when you were investing so much into these clubs? So I think something needs to change. Something needs to improve on the business side, because you can't expect 50,000. Like, what's the number that you need to hit to start making money for any of these Canadian markets? Do you need like 70,000 people showing up to each game to be profitable? Like that, you know, like what is it? Yeah. Like, something needs to be sorted on the business side, and I'm not smart enough to figure it out. But that's kind of what needs to happen ultimately, because the support here is incredible for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Not sure what more people could do here.
Yeah, no, it's been another great season. Wasn't it around when was Thomas Muller? When was the year anniversary?
August. Earlier this month. Yeah.
It was this month, eh? I thought it was this month, yeah. Yeah, wow. Was there a celebration?
Yeah, just some social content. Yeah, people celebrating, I guess, yeah, online, which is how most of this stuff happens now. There wasn't a parade or anything, Charms.
Well, there should be. Not that he's the reason. I mean, given what's happened to Vancouver in the transfer window, losing some big players this season, but they're still winning games. Let me ask J-Mo, is Vancouver your pick in the West?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to look past them. I mean, I know they had a little bit difficult time coming out of the World Cup break, where I think it was winless in six games or something like that. And they, you know, they crashed out of the League's Cup with three losses, although I'm not sure how much of a priority that was. But, you know, I like the fact that last week or whatever was the week before, I can't remember, they lose to Houston at home, which essentially dropped them down to second place in the West. And then they come back and they respond with a 5-0 win over FC Dallas to retake, you know, top spot in the Western Conference. And, you know, look at it. They've had a little bit of injury issues, you know, during the summer. They've lost Sebastian Bearhalter, who went to Middlesbrough. But I think there's just great balance and great depth in that team. And I think Jesper Sorensen deserves a lot of credit for the way he's just sort of brought the team together and managed the team into just a cohesive unit. And, you know, it's not, I appreciate that Thomas Muller is sort of, you know, will grab the majority of the headlines, but he's not sort of like running the show there, so to speak, certainly from a leadership perspective. Yeah. But, you know, they're getting contributions from everyone, from Brian White to, you know, Ocampo to, you know, Ralph Prizo is now sort of stepping up in a big way. So I think you just have to appreciate the overall balance and depth of the roster. And, you know, there's quality everywhere on the pitch for them. And so it's very hard for me to look past anyone else winning the Western Conference.
Lloyd, let me think of some kind of a tough question for you regarding these two teams, Toronto and Vancouver. Well,
I
mean,
I think of Jaden Nelson, and he couldn't get in that team.
Yeah.
He couldn't get in the team. And I like Jaden. Obviously, he's made a nice move abroad now. But you mentioned the manager, John, and I think he deserves a ton of credit.
Yeah.
I mean, who knew this guy before he came in?
Yeah.
And all he's done is just win. And you know, it's not even they play a brand of football that it's just effective.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? You saying that. I mean, it's not a fair comparison or an equal comparison, but remember, Charms, when Arsenal hired Arsene Wenger?
Who was he? Came from Japan.
Yeah, they were like, who's this guy? He's coming
Grampus from, 8.
Yeah, he's coming from Japan, and now he's going to, like, you know, manage the Gunners. Like, who the hell is this guy? And obviously that turned out pretty well. And so I think it was similar. I mean, I hold my hand up. I didn't know terrible amount of Jesper Sorensen when he came over. And I got the sense just from local fans talking to them in Vancouver that they were a bit underwhelmed by this sort of appointment, and they didn't really know who this guy was. And, you know, especially considering who he was replacing, right? Such a big personality in Vanni Sartini. And he's quietly kind of come in and really just sort of get them on back on course again. So I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And like Lloyd says, I think he deserves a lot of the credit for, you know, what's going on with the Whitecaps.
Yeah, I think it was such a reminder, just in these situations, talking to fans, like sometimes when a team is acquiring a player or a coach or whatever, just chill. Because I think we always would bring up the names that we know. And I think at the time it was like past MLS coaches that might be available. And you're like, he's got to be the Caps coach, got to be the Caps coach. And then Jesper Sorensen's name comes up and you're like, yeah, I think a lot of people are like, who's this? Should have been this guy, should have been that person and whatnot. But clearly the right choice. And the people that are doing the research and like finding these players and coaches have a lot more knowledge than average fan, you know, just going through the names that's available on X.
I just love that we on this show have now officially compared Jesper Sorensen to Arsene Wenger, and I want to hear from the audience about that. But I get what you're saying, JMO. I do 100%. Almost out of time here. I got to address here the reportedly proposed new playoff format. Lloyd, have you had a chance to look at this thing and wrangle your head around if it makes any sense whatsoever?
I've never liked the playoffs in MLS. I've never liked it. They're rewarding mediocrity. Any league where there are more teams making the playoffs than not is rewarding mediocrity. I've never liked it. But also, what I will tell you is this. If I tell you nothing else, I've played in the same league that was renamed, I believe, four times back in the days. But I also played at a time, James, where no draws, so there's got to be a winner. 5 seconds to get off a shot from 35 meters out. This is and I played in a league where 6 points were awarded for a win, and every goal above three was a bonus point.
No. Which league was that?
1993. So we actually had a better win-loss record than the two teams directly above us. But they had more bonus points.
No,
so they
finished
higher than us. It was wild. I tell you this because in the United States, they tried to do everything possible to do everything different from the rest of the world. Right. I am shocked that they're going to the European schedule. Yeah. Shocked. Because they just purposely tried to stay clear of syncing with anyone else in the world. So I don't like I believe they're proposing 20 teams of the 30 to make the playoffs. Yeah, that's just wild for me. That's everyone.
Yeah, basically. You're really bad if you don't make that. Like, it's time for a rebuild.
Never been a fan. I mean, it was 19-4-8-8 or 9-9-18 before. Now it's 20, so I've never liked it.
Quickly, what league was it with the bonus points for more than three goals?
That would have been called the A-League.
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 I mean, I've got to tell you, just because we're so, you know...
APSL?
You played in so many leagues, you can't remember what it was called. I tell you, though, I mean, we're only dismissing that because we're so ingrained in the way football has always been, right? 3 points for a win, forget... Now I kind of think about these bonus points. You know, they do it in rugby, right? For certain tries.
Yeah,
We do always complain about not enough scoring, too many defensive coaches out there. Tell you, it might not be the worst idea in the world. Maybe the second worst in the world.
I don't know why six. Where did they get the six from? I never actually asked. Yeah. Where did the six come from? Why not three?
That's rugby. Six for a try.
Oh, is that what? Okay.
Was four for a try, then two for conversion, but that's five for a try. And this has changed. JMO, your thoughts on the playoff? I know you've seen the bracket, right? That bracket that was made up. Yeah. Tell me you don't like it.
It's ridiculous. Okay. I mean, I'm not exactly thrilled with the current playoff format as it is, especially, you know, the best of three first round series. I mean, I just think that's ridiculous. But to have 20 teams out of 30 make the playoffs and then to have that sort of page playoff system where losing teams get a second chance, I mean, I don't like that at all. It seems like MLS is just trying to find a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. Yes. I mean, you know, they say by doing this, it kind of creates potential. I guess the argument is that it'll create more meaningful games and make
Jeopardy.
Yeah, is the word. It'll kind of make the like regular season mean a lot more. But when you look at it, like the last couple seasons, you know, the races for the final playoff spots in both the Eastern and Western Conference have come down to the wire with like a lot of teams in the mix. So I'm not sure why they feel like obligated to find a solution for a problem that isn't there. But, you know, that seems to be MLS's track record. They just can't seem to leave well enough alone sometimes.
When you have 30 teams, there's going to be some meaningless games. Okay, that's football. Sure, that's sport. Exactly. It happens. It's not the worst thing in the world, right? So shut up. Asa, tell me you're not going to be devil's advocate here.
I can't. Okay. There's nothing I like about the thing. You guys described it the other day in a podcast. I think that was the first time I had it really spelled out to me, and I still couldn't totally understand it. Like a loser bracket, essentially. Like feels like an old high school basketball tournament. I have no idea what's going on. And then to try to describe this and get your fan base to understand, I think, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. I mean, the day I hear someone that likes it, I mean, they're not welcome in this show.
Well, the coaches will. The coaches that keep their jobs because they made the playoffs will.
Mm. Oh, okay. That's a good point, actually. Didn't think about that. Yeah, job security, right? Hey, I made the playoffs. I wasn't one of the 10 worst teams.
You know what? Respectfully, I'm not sure if I agree with that because when they sort of changed to the current sort of edition, it meant two extra teams, I think, going into the playoffs. Yeah. I can remember asking Bob Bradley at the time what he thought about it, and he was like, he was not having any of it. I mean, he just thought it was ridiculous that they were going to do, you know, what they were doing and having a best of three series. He did not like it at all. So I don't know.
Also, he just signed Lorenzo Insigne and Bernadeschi and thought he would win the cup. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. Well, perhaps. But but I'm not sure like coaches will necessarily be on board with it, to be honest. Maybe, but who knows?
Well, listen, Larry Bird, the new commissioner, he loves it, apparently. Well, I say that. It's under his watch, anyway, that they're discussing this. So if that's his first major move as commissioner, I've got some serious flags about Larry Bird. But it hasn't happened yet. They might vote it down. Listen, fellas, we're out of time. JMO, tfcrepublic.ca. Anything you want to talk about that just quickly promote? Is that it? Any deals coming up? Any freebies coming up?
We will actually get to, interesting that you mentioned, we will be having like a Labor Day sale, I think next week, whenever Labor Day is. So yeah, so be on the lookout for that.
I was talking to JMO before we went on air. He's been doing this for 5 years now, right, JMO? Five years? Yeah. How many playoff games have you covered?
Zero.
Zero. Okay. Yeah. And he's still going strong. Though it's amazing. this site's so good that it's successful even with a terrible TFC team over the years.
Yeah, but obviously I'm the curse, so.
All right. It's all about JMO. Hey, sir, you're on the call this weekend?
Yes, big game for the Vancouver Whitecaps, SKC at SKC, so it's a tricky trap game potentially. And first of 7 in 3 weeks for the Vancouver Whitecaps, so a busy stretch ahead. And all the games on CKNW, 7:30. So yeah, tune in. Catch us. Should be a fun ride for the Vancouver Whitecaps here.
Lloyd, give us some love for some Nepean Hotspurs here, can you?
Nepean Hotspurs, not to be confused with Tottenham Hotspurs, no relation.
What is a Hotspur, by the way? What is a Hotspur?
I have no idea what a Hotspur is. Something hot.
And spurry.
What is it? Spurry. We are the first and only official youth club partner of Bayern Munich. So happy to share that. We started that this year. And that's going strong. They've come over and they've run a couple camps and that's going strong. So happy to report about that. But it's a nice little club. So just a quick tidbit, the award for senior male and senior female at the end of the year, which is in September, is named after Charmaine and Lyndon Hooper, both of whom grew up with this club and was trained at this club.
Wow. That's fantastic. Charmaine, you know, for the younger ones listening, she was Sinky before Sinky.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. She was that good.
Yeah.
And some might say she was better in a different era. I mean, what a player she was.
That's on the next one.
Yeah. That would be a good conversation. Who is better, Christian Sinclair or Charmaine Hooper?
Let's get Charmaine on here, man. I'll send you her number and get her on here.
Love it. We'd love to get her on, actually. Dubs would love that as well. That'd be a great. Yes, let's do that. That's a great idea. Yeah. Any chance you're is your grand plan, though, to replace Uli Hoeneß at Bayern Munich?
Let me get back to you. Same with the league name. I got a few things to get back to you, man.
All right, fair enough. Listen, good luck with your travel back, mate, and I'm glad that the week-long party has finally come to its conclusion, but congratulations. That was Thank you, a great honor for you, and well-deserved.
I appreciate that, James. Thank you.
All right, that's Footy Prime, everyone, for another day. We're back on Monday. Send us your comments, your thoughts, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Until then, BetMGM.
Make it legendary.
Bye-bye.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
JC, knit together the two conversations.